Welcome to the Agile Wire, brought to you by Wisconsin Agility. We want you to get agile and stay agile. Now here are your hosts, Jeff Bubbles and Chad Beyer.
And we're recording. All right, kick us off, Jeff.
All right, we have Juliana Ceja on the podcast with us today. Juliana's the lead agile coach at Here Technologies, CEO of Ceja Strategies, and CTO of Awarenix.io. So how did you fall into this role?
Yeah, so how I became an agile coach, again, it was an unconventional path, starting off with prior to me entering technology, I had so many different jobs. I was an esthetician, so I worked at a spa downtown. I actually was also a medical equipment sales rep. I sold laser, or I rented to physicians lasers for toenail fungus. I was a coat check girl, you know, so you give your coat check ticket. I mean, I've worked so many odd end jobs. I've worked at pizza places and salons. And anyways, fast forward, you know, I mentioned the startup that I was with, the 3PL logistics company. Started off in tech as a business analyst on a scrum team. And my first week on that team, I had to go train with Centaire, you know, in Milwaukee and get my Scrum Master certification. So I was completely new to software development, completely new to Agile. I had no understanding of what the waterfall world. This Scrum and Agile is pretty much like how I started off. And so I worked on that team, you know, for a couple years as a business analyst, then becoming a project manager and program manager as the company scaled. So my role grew as the company grew and had to support a more sophisticated process, right? We had to support the needs for the business. And I had CTOs pretty much asking me, you know, your team is pretty healthy. Can you go and work with this team, or can you teach what you're doing? I was asked to replicate the practices that the team was doing, or really understand what challenges other teams had and help them to become more efficient. So what I was doing prior to being a formal Agile coach, I didn't understand that as a formality, right? I didn't think what I'm doing is Agile coaching. I just thought, you know, I learned and been part of a really awesome team, and I'm bringing what I learned and my natural ability to empathize with people and their processes and the environment that they're in and help them improve what they're doing, right? So after that, I went to go work as a business analyst, and I was also asked to be part of their agile transformation. And that's really where my eyes opened up to, you know, what the waterfall world was versus what agile brings. And I was very frustrated with the way that things were going, being on the internal side of that transformation. And I say that because I came from a company where we started sprinting right away, right? Like we started sprinting, we had something to show after 2 weeks. We were just going to a company that wanted to spend months developing a handbook, essentially. They were paying consultants to help them develop a handbook that would then help the company understand how to execute Scrum. And I just thought that was the most ridiculous thing. And I continuously pushed, and I thought, you know, this is something that I really have a passion for, helping companies move forward and helping companies understand the practices that and frameworks that support a healthy team and making sure you're building the right things at the right time and building what people want and what they need. And so I had a sales rep from Centaire, from an agile consulting firm, ask me if I was interested in the role, or ask me what I wanted to do. And I said, well, you know, I would love to be an agile coach. That is my dream job. But I know at the time I think it was 25, 26. I said, I know I'm far too young. I need more experience. And let's be honest, I'm not old, white, and bald. So So to date, that's, you know, all I saw in that role were older white men. And I just felt like that was an impossibility. And the person from Centerre said, you know what, why don't you apply to this job? We have a position open. I think you'll be surprised. And I think they could benefit from, you know, someone they can mold and from your fresh perspective. And so I applied, and that was, I ended up getting the role. And I'm so grateful that Centerre, you know, took a chance on someone who was less experienced. And I helped grow that Chicago market along with Rob and Chad and another member, Conrad. And so from there, that became my identity. And even going into working for jobs and companies such as Amazon, other companies that I didn't necessarily have the role as Agile coach, that's still the identity I brought with me and the skill set that I brought with me. And that's who I am today. So,
yeah, that's awesome. I feel like it's a story a lot of people in the Agile community share, is that like once you've been exposed and learned certain things, you can't unsee them, you can't unlearn them. And so in a way, I always say this, we're like broken in a good way because we carry that forward into anything we do, right? Like when I make an egg omelet in the morning, I'm trying to optimize my cycle time and you know, optimize for flow in my kitchen. Like I can't shut it off now, you know. It's it's kind of a curse, but it speaks to me loudly when you talk about an identity you take to the next job, regardless of what the title is. I like that.
Yeah. Going back to that Less course, I was just thinking about systems thinking to my garden, because I couldn't figure out why my peonies weren't blooming last year. And I had eradicated, because we had an ant problem, and I dealt with the ant problem, but peonies need ants in order to bloom. So I didn't realize that. And I'm ready to start spreading, you know, the ant bait. And I had to stop myself because I'm like, wait, hold on. I want my peonies to bloom. And it just made me think of decisions that get made in organizations on a daily level, where, you know, an executive or a manager, or even, you know, somebody at the team level makes a decision and unknowingly doesn't see, right, or has done the work to understand, and maybe not even at their own fault, how that could impact unintentionally and create a negative, you know, something negative to occur.
Yeah. So stop using ant poison is the moral of the
story,
right?
Pretty much, yes. If I want my peonies, I need to keep the ants.
Awesome. So we've known each other for quite a while. What are some of the passion projects, I guess, or the things that you've, you know, put your effort into in the Chicago area?
Okay, so specific to Chicago, I think one, that's because, you know, one, yes, I am from Chicago, just like Michelle Obama says, I'm just a girl from the south side of Chicago. And it's very true. I grew up by Midway Airport, which is close, like between 63rd. I grew up closer to 63rd and Pulaski. It was majorly a Hispanic and Polish neighborhood, which is my background. I'm Mexican, German, and Polish. And I was introduced to technology very early on because my aunt actually owned a technology company, and my mom would bring home computers, right? I was introduced to the hardware component of it. So she would bring home computers, and she would, to keep me busy, she would tell me take apart the computer and put it back together again. So that's what I spent my time doing, you know, when I was 12 years old, and I just thought it was the most fun thing. And after that, you know, went on high school, and after, I didn't really think much more about technology until I worked at a company called Coyote Logistics, and I was hired as a scheduler. So I was calling truck drivers and scheduling loads and talking to facilities and scheduling loads to get from point A to point B for beer routes, a major beer distributor. And I had to do that all in Spanish, when that isn't necessarily my native language. So after about 7 months with that company, and the unique piece is because there was that language barrier, the way the rest of the company worked was specific operations. So you were in scheduling, or you were in routing, or you were in, booking. And because of the language barrier and me being one of the only people who spoke, well enough Spanish to communicate with our stakeholders, I had to learn the entirety of the system. And because of that, I had very intimate knowledge of, or I should say a well-rounded knowledge of the functionality. At about 6 to 7 months into the job, I was very bored with operations. I love doing new things and learning new things. And so I applied for a job with the software development team, and I landed a job as a business analyst working on a Scrum team of senior software developers. So that's a little bit about my introduction into technology and how I started. But as to go back to your question about the specific Chicago projects, I mean, there are so many. I guess I can start going backwards, which is, DePaul University has the ID Lab. So that is their incubator. And I work with Professor Yella there. And I'll do a couple, I'll do Agile workshops, or I'll speak at one of their classes for students who are looking to enter this type of career and field. And then, I've also worked with Canatech, which is an incubator for cannabis-focused technology startups. And I was participating in that group last year, in that incubator last year, as a teacher for their roadmap course, and became a mentor to a couple of the startups after that, one of which I actually came on board, that being AwareX.io.
So lots of incubators, startups that you're working with. And I know you've also worked with a lot of large organizations.
Right.
So
yeah.
Your passion projects are startups. Like, what's the main differences? What are you trying to do with these startups? How do they use Agile? Aren't they just naturally Agile?
Yeah, like, I thought startups were hip and Agile to begin with, right? They don't need any advising around agility, do they?
Well, that's exactly my incorrect assumption, or at least was my assumption. I want to think, I don't know what year this was, but this had to have been at least 8 to 9 years ago, where I was addressed by a product owner, and he must have heard me speak on a panel, one of the panels that I was on, and he was looking for guidance from somebody with my background as to how to get his products to market. And I just thought, oh, that's interesting. You're a startup. Like, what, I'm used to these big organizations where you're fighting, not fighting, but working with this bureaucratic process and many layers, and having to deal with multiple lines of communication and these vast projects and initiatives. And so I was intrigued that not only this, product owner, but startups after that were seeing benefit in simple activities. And it's not necessarily packaging and marketing it as Agile, right? Or even Scrum. It's just these small snippets of practices that they can take to help their organization scale. So it's almost like, do you want to, if I were to talk about this in regard to nutrition, right? Do you wait until you're older and you have a family to start, being aware of nutrition and eating healthy and, working out and making sure that your family has those practices in place? Or would you have rather have that started when you were younger, right? When it was just you, and you embed those practices, and as you grow, as your family and communities grow, they grow with you, and you're teaching them that from the beginning. So I changed the way that I looked at, Agile and startups, and just assuming that they couldn't benefit from it. Now, there are certain frameworks, of course, in Agile, such as Scrum and, many other frameworks that are about discipline and are supporting a group of certain amount of people, right? Because we know how complex things can be, particularly when things become more than, over three people involved, we'll say. So you have to be mindful of overburdening them with process. that's not the goal when you're working with a startup. You're, it's not, yes, you want to embed discipline and coach them to have those type of disciplines and practices, but you also need to be mindful that you don't need a ton of overhead of process when you're just starting out. So a couple of the things that I've done that I really enjoy doing is working with startups on their roadmap, working with them on their backlog, working with them on just getting some of the organizational components and the artifacts in place that will help them grow. And one of my favorite things to do is a story mapping session. So doing a product owner workshop, because essentially that's who you're working with one-on-one. If you're talking about a startup of one or two or three, you're working with, you know, a product owner and the two other teammates. And so the goals are really, you know, what is a story map? Essentially, what is the dynamic backlog that you're trying to build, or what problem you're trying to solve? And two, you know, what is your vision? What is your mission? Getting those statements solidified. And the third thing is, I said roadmap, vision statements, but oh yeah, your MVP. So that is the most critical thing when working with a startup, is making sure that they're aware that you can test and you need to validate your ideas, and you can do it with less than you think and sooner than you think. So how can we validate your idea in 2 weeks or less, or 4 weeks or less? And an example of what I've done, you know, what we've done with OAREX.io, you know, in the absence of this sophisticated platform, which, you know, takes development resources, it takes time, it takes money that requires lots of funding. And until we're there, rather than just waiting, you know, we've been able to utilize tools, right? Simple tools to be able to validate that, whether it be a survey tool or a low-code, no-code type of system, and be the manual, right? We become the face of the interface, the sophisticated interface, until that is put in place. And we've gotten tremendous feedback on simple things that we would not have thought of had we waited, right? And, or I should say, wouldn't have surfaced until we launched with a final product. So MVP, roadmap, and backlog would be the three main things that I would suggest to any startup in working with an agile coach or somebody in this field.
Yeah, I think that it's probably pretty easy just to start building things in any field, whether you're a big company or just a startup. It's like, oh, this is really cool, and get in love with the tech, right? And like, just build stuff, right? And then if you're not thinking about like, well, what am I learning from this, and what am I trying to validate, and how else can we do this, you know, it's very easy to like just not do not build things in a way that helps you learn what the market actually really wants, you know,
right,
and overbuild and things.
With bigger companies, I mean, the large companies that are dealing with, you know, hundreds of initiatives and, you know, tens and thousands of developers, the challenge there, I feel, where my focus is on the communication piece and making sure that there's alignment and prioritization. Right. And it's the exact opposite with a startup, where they're aligned. It needs to be clear. If you have a, you know, that product, if you have a mission, if you have that single roadmap, because of the simplicity in that, you are aligned as a team, and you spend less effort, right, on the communication aspect and more effort on the execution.
Yeah, I love this. It makes me, so what's bouncing around in my head is, large organizations, I'm gonna paint some stereotypes about organizations, mm-hmm, here.
Yep.
So if I offend you, organizations, I'm sorry. but large, let's say, organizations, they tend to be slow feature factories, right? Feature factory, like we just build, but we're not validating very often. And they go slow at that, typically, right? Just broad strokes here. A startup, well, they can move a lot quicker. They're more aligned. But they're still at risk of just, like Jeff said, building the feature factory. So what I'm hearing is that no matter whether you're a startup or a large Fortune 500 that has grown and maybe added a little bit too much process and bureaucracy into your organization, you can both benefit from product product management advice, product strategy advice, because that's what I feel like we're talking about right now. Like closing, Jeff and I were just talking about this morning, closing the agile feedback loop, right? It's very easy to order something and go work on it, but to close the loop by validating, by actually launching, by talking about an MVP right away instead of down the road, like the quicker you get that feedback loop working for you, doesn't matter whether you're a huge organization with tens of thousands of employees or just a small startup, that's right. That's what really matters. Would you agree?
Right. And they're less worried about, I should say, larger organizations tend to get more caught up in, you know, how do I keep everybody busy, right? Like, how do I keep this system efficient? How do I keep people plugging, you know, writing code and making sure that everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing? And you see these multi levels of management, right? And that's just like, it's just this giant hamburger, right? This massive, like multi-layer of management. And you don't have that with startups.
Yeah. You know, I feel like for decades now, I mean, I guess maybe decades, because the word agile has been around since 2001 now, you know. How many times have people written on a blog or in an article or at a conference talk like, well, agile is just fad. It's going to go away and there's going to be something new. I kind of, you know how like styles of clothing come in and out over the decades and then they come back? Like, I feel like the whole time, all we've ever been talking about is strategy, right? Like,
at the end of the day, I think we're just talking about how to address complex problems. I actually gave a global organization-wide talk about this and dealing with complexity. And the audience was specifically meant for people that do not fall within technology. You know, you're not a software developer. Maybe you've never heard of the word. And the way I described it is, you know, thinking of the word agile, right? We want to swap that with the word strong. So getting people in the mindset, when you think of strong, what do you think? Well, I think that strong is something maybe you aim to be, right? So I aim to be strong. And my definition of strong or strength may be different from your definition. Mm-hmm. Maybe strong to you means being able to lift, I don't know, what is it? 200 pounds, or my definition of strong might be able to lift, you know, my body weight, which I'm not going to say. So, I'm going down this path because when we talk about agile, it's not just, you know, a practice. It's not just, you know, a thing you want to be. You have to understand how is your organization defining it, or how are you defining this at a personal level? So I like people to put themselves in a frame of mind where they're thinking of the word as the word strong. So how do I define it? What does strength mean? You know, being strong, what does that mean to me and my organization? Does it mean I can run 10 miles, you know, in under a certain amount of time? And then also it's an evolution. I'm not going to say I'll be done being strong when, you know, I become this weight and I'm able to lift this amount and my diet is X. No, it's something you continuously work at. It's something you continuously improve, and maybe you set different benchmarks, and that's how you go about being strong. And I see agile as the exact same way. And when people don't have that foundational mindset or understanding of the word agile, they get caught up in the practices and they get caught up in the software and the tools and the fads. So if we stop thinking about it that way and we started thinking about being agile, the more we think about, like the way we think about being strong, I think that conversation, you know, becomes obsolete.
I love it. So there's this J.J. Watt quote that you're making me think about here. So Adam, do you know who J.J. Watt is? He's a football player. He just retired. He's from Wisconsin.
I don't do sports.
Okay. Well, the quote still stands. Anyway, he's kind of well known for being a very hard worker. And his quote is, success isn't owned, it's leased, and rent is due every single day. And I think about, you could flip the word success with agility. Agility isn't owned. It's rented, and you know, rent's due every single day, right? Like,
absolutely.
It's something you have to do all the time, or it's just going to fall apart, right? Like, it's not just a one and done thing, for sure. Totally agree.
Exactly.
Yeah. too often, I think we see organizations and maybe just people's mindset that they think they can just go to Costco and buy some of that Agile stuff off the shelf and plug it into the organization and it's going to work. And that's just not the way it works, right?
Yes. Yes. I definitely see that a lot.
But I bought the transformation.
Exactly. I bought, you know, this package of whether it be hours or I bought this workshop, right? I bought this workshop and now everything should be good because, you know, everyone's on the same page and now they know what to do. And it is an investment, right? And it is an investment. And that's why I take pride on the volunteer work that I've been able to do with incubators. And I've also actually brought these same concepts that we teach within Agile to development teams. I brought these concepts to nonprofits. And I want to say it was in 2021, over the summer, I helped co-write the curriculum for a nonprofit and I embedded agility, right? So what am I teaching during the day and how do I translate that to kids who are between the ages of 14 and 21? And they were, in fact, developing a product over the life cycle of their, you know, internship summer program. But I actually used Agile as a way to teach them self-development. So what is a Kanban board, right? How would you use a Kanban board to hold yourself accountable, to outline and create a backlog of your personal goals? And how do you even break down those big dreams into manageable, actionable tasks? So that was certainly one of my favorite things to do. And I always find myself thinking of ways to translate the conventional Agile approach to unconventional ways that have nothing to do with software development.
I love that. Yeah. Did you get into like someone's got a lawn mowing business or something and they want to be an entrepreneur and they're like, well, I went and got the gas today. It's like, well, that provided no value. That's a task. That's how you get work done. Like, did you get into like stuff like that with them or like?
So with these kids, you know, it was more about you have to maintain the motivation, but you also have to help them. That board was really to help them keep themselves and one another accountable. So it was more about the discipline, the practice. Okay, you know, we meet bi-weekly. We're going to go to our boards and kind of just give you do a scrum, but with your own board and pretty much tell everyone what your impediments are and see how we can help one another. But there were a couple kids in there who had aspirations of, you know, one just had an aspiration of just getting a job. Like, he's just like, I just want to get a job. I want to be a barber. I'm like, okay, are you licensed? Are you, you know, have you met the requirement? Okay, what do you need to do? Well, first you need to go to school. Well, I can't go to school because I don't have, or I can't go to school for that because I don't have a car to get me there. Okay, well, is there something you can do in the interim, right? Is it, you know, so we went down those types of conversations. Or, you know, another girl who, she already had one t-shirt business at the age of 16 and she was looking to start up another business. I was blown away by these kids. It was very exciting to be able to use that for their personal endeavors and get to know more about what they're doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So as we're talking here, right, we've all spent time inside of organizations, large and small, trying to make an impact, right? Whether we call that agile, agility, strong, strength, strategy, what are some of the patterns, right? Jeff and I talk about these all the time, but what are some of the patterns that you think are, there's probably listeners who are struggling with 1 to 10 to 100 impediments they walk into every day. What are some that you've seen over and over again? And what are ways that you've dealt with kind of removing those impediments or helping others remove those?
Yep. I can definitely cover, discuss the top three that come up in the workshops that I facilitate. One is, it's always prioritization. So prioritization is a big one. And I love that the LESS course, Craig Larman and Boss Fode's LESS course talks about this, specifically the amount of different lists that every organization has, right? I mean, if you were to do an audit of all the list of priorities, and it's a very simple concept, right? To understand and appreciate distinct priorities, right? You have a priority number one and then number two and number three. And where that gets convoluted is, well, one, everyone has to be on the same page, in a large organization, that is a challenge. It's possible. It's certainly possible with the right leadership and the right support and the right coach. It's possible. And then the next layer of that, which I'll always remember from the first LESS course I took, is if you bake in or if you try to embed too many layers in your priority process, meaning if you have these OKRs, right, that maybe your objectives then break out down into your different initiatives and goals, and then those goals break down into another layer of work, which then breaks down into milestones, which then breaks down into features and epics and stories, right? And all, you end up having this hierarchy of 8 to 10 layers of work, and that becomes unmanageable. And then the work gets spent on linking and figuring out how one piece connects to the other and updating all the different progress statuses, rather than focusing on minimizing that to, I believe Craig Larman suggests, no more than 3, right? No more than 3 layers. And don't quote me on anything that Craig says, because he'll yell at me about that in a public forum. So maybe we take that piece out. But I agree that, you know, we should minimize, and an organization should minimize, and I'm getting away from the question here. So the question was, what are the main challenges? Main challenges I see coming out of my workshops are struggling with prioritization across, you know, dealing with these multiple lists, and not only the multiple lists, but the multiple hierarchies within that list of how the work items break down. And then the second piece, would be communication. Nobody comes out and says, we have a problem with team dynamics, but there is 1,000% opportunities for team dynamics. And what I mean by that is, when you're in a relationship, think about a relationship between two people and how much work that takes, right? It takes a lot of work to be in a healthy, meaningful relationship. So now, the most of your time is spent with your coworkers, with your team, with your organization, at least, you know, Monday through Friday or whenever it is your work week is. And now you're not talking about a relationship between two people. You're talking about a relationship between 3, 5, 6, 10, 100,000 people. Whether you look at it, at the team you're on or the project you're on or the product you're working on, but that takes effort. It takes effort to have a healthy team. And I've talked about this early on in my career, was the idea of employee citizenship. I've actually seen that term now formalized, and I really do stand by it. And employee citizenship doesn't mean that you succumb to your organization and your organization is like family, right? And it becomes the priority. No, that's not what employee citizenship means. It means that you are active, like an active, engaged member of that community, right? And you are truly trying your best and being your best to make sure that you're doing what's best for that organization and yourself. So I think prioritization, team dynamics, because that takes a lot of work. And then the third piece, I would say, would be understanding what your products are. I know organizations are getting better at this, but many organizations have yet to define what is their true product or products. And they're aligned by components, or they're aligned by services, or they're, you know, what they're doing is they're creating segregation within their own company. And, you know, we shouldn't do that. We understand the value for cross-functional and for diversity. And I'm talking about coming from a skill set here and trying to get work to done, we should embrace that approach. But what ends up happening is, you know, we still to this day will stick people in silos. And I don't think it's intentional. I don't think it's, you know, we don't want QA to talk to the development team. I think it's unintentional approach, thinking that you're doing what's best for the organization. So in summary, prioritization, team dynamics, and what was the third one?
Well, just knowing your product, right?
Yes. Yeah. Productization. Yes.
Not to turn this into a plug for large scale Scrum taught by Craig Larman, mm-hmm. but you know,
Larman lover.
Yeah.
Larman
like, lover. So you remember, right, Juliana, like we attended, it was when Craig started teaching the LESS courses, right? It was, wasn't the first one he taught, but it was pretty early on. It was back in 2015, 2016 timeframe, I want to say. And yes. we went to one of those, right, in Chicago. And I think our minds were blown, right? Like I like training I go to where I'm rattled, but in a good way. Like it makes me question everything I know up until this point. And so Craig's coming to Chicago again in July. Jeff, do I have these dates right? July 24th, 25th, 26th, a 3-day course.
Correct.
We're partnering with him and we're bringing him into Chicago again. We've done this. This will be the third or fourth time now, I think. I've been through the class 3 times with Craig already, so I'm either a bad student or a continuous learner or maybe a little bit of both. I'm not sure, but.
And I've taken it twice. And I would take it again.
It speaks to what you're talking about with the number of lists and the prioritization and the product. Like the reason ordering backlogs, quote unquote, fake backlogs, is because there's way too many things called like that gets blessed as its own list. And it's primarily because organizations don't lean towards the broad product spectrum. They go towards these narrow definitions and then chaos is unleashed, right? So it's, I don't know, it's 3 days. The course makes you think really hard, but it basically like breaks down what an organization is and builds it back up in a different way. Mm-hmm. And you're doing it all through visuals and mind maps on the wall. Like I've got some photos of like the aftermath of a 3-day class with Craig. And it's just every time I'm like blown away, like, wow, we created all that on the walls in 3 days. So it's a great course. I don't know. It's fun. We love partnering with Craig on it and obviously enjoy attending it every time.
I'll just quickly add a little something in there is, you know, I've taken the course when we took it back in, you know, 2015, 2016, like you said. I took it again in New York this past November. And I tell anybody in our field, I mean, anybody in technology, anybody who owns an organization, you will benefit from this class. Not only will you benefit from this class, but there's so much content and so many practices and just awareness that makes you think about how you're going about your organization and making sure that you're being successful.
What kind of like job titles, Juliana, would you recommend? You know, said everybody, but like, right. Like who?
I mean, most certainly agile coaches. If you are an entrepreneur, I honestly feel that what you're going to learn, especially if you're mid to large size, CEO, anybody in the C-suite, he does have a specific course for executives, but it doesn't stray far from the curriculum of, you know, an agile practitioner course, because I believe you still end up with the same certification at the end of the day. So it really just might, you know, if you take the executive course versus a practitioner course, I think the only difference might be the audience. But like I said, any executive, anybody in the C-suite, anybody in a champion role, you know, maybe a lead architect or a senior engineer, most impactful will be anybody who can go back to the organization and bring forth those ideas that might rattle a few of those layers that I discussed, but in a positive way. So I always tell people that I would take this course once to twice a year if I could. You know, that's how beneficial it is. And I don't think, you know, Chad, to your point, it's us being poor learners. I think it's just the quality of the content and the delivery that Craig himself provides when he teaches that course. And if you're a fan of systems thinking, which I am an absolute fan of systems thinking, I've taken the MIT course through systems thinking, but I was introduced to systems thinking through Craig Larman's course. And when you're dealing with complexity and trying to understand the impacts of decisions, both large and small, it is the most critical tool you can have in your belt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know when I went, my head hurt every single day when I got done. I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much knowledge I just feel like I just gained. But once you see it, you can't unsee it. And this is a really good thing. Like, I don't know, scaling Scrum is hard. Like, let's just be real here. Like, when you get a lot of people working on a common thing, like, it's hard to keep everybody aligned and focused. And how do you work together? But, I mean, I think Craig's been doing it for a lot of years. He's got a lot of stuff worked out. And he's got a lot of answers that if you haven't heard them before, it's going to probably totally change the way you approach work going forward. And so I don't know. I recommend it to everybody and anybody. Like, I'm excited. It's my second time going now, and I'm like, I can't wait to the third time, the fourth time. Like, because I think the more you can do it, the better, right? Like, just surround yourself with people that, you know, have great knowledge to share. That's going to be really valuable for you.
Absolutely.
So since we've turned this into a full on less course commercial, I'm gonna keep going with it, Juliana. Summertime in Chicago. Come on, right? Like, if anyone's listening when this airs, this should actually launch before the course. So,
okay,
if you're on the fence of whether you should register, like, summertime in Chicago is the place to be, right?
Oh yes. I mean, I am temporarily relocating to Hawaii, and I purposely will do that after the summer is over because I will not miss summer in Chicago. And I mean, it's, if you're coming from out of state, or even the suburbs, it's well worth it. There are plenty of activities, festivals, restaurants. So
yeah, there's an energy in the city in the summertime that I feel like it changes through the seasons, because this is in the Midwest, obviously, but
yes.
Yeah, and we're right downtown, right? We're right down there, right off Michigan Avenue again. So if anyone's, you know, we've had a lot of attendees attend from overseas as well, outside the U.S., turn it into a vacation. All right, there, the plug's done.
I'm sorry, Jeff, you were saying something.
I was going to go on another topic, and it's probably too deep to go into it, but, and I know you have the time. The last question I was going to ask you is like, okay, there's not that many women in tech, especially as agile coaches and trainers, like, they're just not that many. Like, what do we do differently to increase that? I mean, you have a very different... You know, you have an atypical path probably to getting into this role, but I think we almost all do, but you still made it through, and you're one of a few, you know, so how do we increase that?
Yes. Well, Women in Agile is an organization that has done fantastic work. I actually talked about this, I want to say it was like summer of 2020. I did a talk, and I think it was with Women in Agile, and it's interesting because if you look at the Google search trends and when people were looking for the term Agile coach and Agile, it, you know, kind of exploded during that time, throughout and after the pandemic, as a need to really respond to what was going on at a global level for every organization, or I should say most. And so why that pertains to us is because I've also seen that explosion, in both seeing other women, you know, and even other minorities, just minorities in general, getting more jobs in tech. And how do we expose, I think, you know, partnering with organizations such as Women in Agile, partnering with, I know I've attempted to have a few meetup groups, either for certain local areas, or even just mentoring through tech startups. But I don't know that the question is like, how do we get more women to be agile coaches?
Anywhere in tech, I think. And, right. But I think that, you know, we don't see them at maybe things that take a little more experience, you know, like those types of positions yet. But I think there are a number of things that are happening in recent years, right? To add more minorities and women into tech, but it probably takes some time too to like build that up, because you have to get a certain level of experience to have that, you know, take on this role and then that role and then this role, right?
To your point, it's also about setting the precedence and the example. So Elon Musk, didn't he just put a female as a CTO of Twitter, right? I mean, I know there's criticism around who he put in that position, but me as a woman seeing that, that's inspiring to me. Anytime I see a woman in a leadership role, you know, it's actually what's driven me to go to companies to work with them. Sure. And also, you know, even applying for roles such as like an engineering manager, seeing women in those roles, I mean, it means something to me. It has to mean something to other women. But being able to see that somebody who looks like you in that role is inspiring, and they have to understand that it's possible, versus being in organizations which don't necessarily have that type of representation in their leadership, I think tends to make people feel like it's not possible or it's more challenging. And also the role that, you know, me as a mom of two young kids, I mean, it's just, it's a lot, right? So it's a lot handling the workload and then at home. And I have a partner who is extremely involved. Like my husband plays more of the mom role than I do, right? Like he's up getting breakfast together, but then, you know, when the kids are sick, well, who's got to go get them, right? And when they want mommy, they want mommy. So it's, I can only imagine how difficult it is for people who don't have that type of support. And that goes hand in hand with the decision to take a step up and take that responsibility to be in management or to be at the director level. So I think it's having the right mentorship, having the right support, you know, being at the next level is certainly next in my personal roadmap, professional roadmap, you know, a director, C-suite level in a major organization. But I'd be lying if I said that there's things that concern me, such as, you know, my capacity to do that and to be a present mom and available for my kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So remote work, I think allowing remote work, as much as the trend is going, every organization wants everyone back in the office. I think remote work has provided a great flexibility for parents in general, right? And being able to have that flexibility, I think, is critical.
It's good that it's on the edge of everyone's mind, right? And giving, at least trying to open up those opportunities and give people nudges, right? Like, I think giving people a nudge to just go after something, even if they're like not quite sure they think they can.
Oh, yes. A lot of the mentors and people who open doors for me, you know, whether it be the role, were actually, you know, they were men and women, but I've had mentors who just had a conversation with me. You know, it's, yep, it's not that we had this formal mentor mentee relationship. It was, you know, what is it that you'd like to do? And even if it's not the organization that you're with, you know, they were very open with, you know, I think you're capable of a lot more. And I know that there's this opportunity at another company. Maybe just have a conversation, right? And it's not that they're, what I see younger generations doing now, and I know I'll probably get canceled for this, you know, it's almost like they want you to do everything for them, you know, to do every little step of the way. And I think whether it be the follow-up or, you know, the multiple introductions or the forwarding, and I think, you know, you have to take ownership around following up with people. You also have to understand that, you know, sometimes people need more than one or two reminders. You have to keep at it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that is a whole other conversation.
No, but I do like that because it resonates with me too, right? Like I think in a lot of people's stories, you can point to a handful of people who said something that at the time to the person telling you it, the small nudge they gave you was probably very small. They don't even remember doing it. Mm-hmm. But there's a combination of you taking that opportunity and then putting some effort into it and then things happen. And you can tell anyone's story of their career progression or life progression, whatever, and you can point to those. Like, I can think back to the moments where somebody was like, hey, this email looks interesting. You should follow up with this person and check it out. And it opened up this huge opportunity for me to become, you know, dive into public speaking. And I still have a relationship with that person from that one email that somebody just sent to me through a forward.
Yeah.
Or, hey, you should quit your job and start your own company. And then five people tell you it, and finally you go do it. So there's many of those
stories. To that point, I think it's the giving people positive feedback, not for the sake of doing it, right? Of saying something nice. It's they may not know, right? Or they may not be aware that that is something they do really well. So
yes. An
example, one of the best compliments I've ever received was from a CTO. And he said, if I had 10 of you, I could rule the world. You know, and I thought that was such a cool, fun piece of feedback. And I said, oh, come on, you could do it with five. And so, but to know that he thought that highly of me, to know that he trusted me, right, to execute what needed to get done, to know that I was dependable, that I could do what he asked me to do and move things forward. That was huge for me to understand and kind of validate my value, because I didn't know that in the beginning, early on in my career. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other conversations in regard to pay, having a, you know, senior manager tell me, you know, you could be working in a role getting paid six figures. And at that point I thought, that's impossible. Like, who would ever pay me that much? And I go into every once I took that barrier off my mind, the way I think of it, I feel like I took a physical barrier off of my limits. And every conversation I went into, yes, I certainly had conversations where these young recruiters would laugh and say, oh, you know, you're never going to get that. And then I, you know, talk to the next one or go to the next job. And you know what? Someone's going to say yes, you know, and more than often, if they see your value, they will say yes. And they might exceed that. So I now go into every conversation with, you know, understanding my value and knowing nothing is off limits.
Yeah. All right. So if we want to transition to one more topic, what would you want to talk about?
What is your next song that's coming out?
So the next song is, you know, the song, Come On Eileen. Come on, Eileen.
Okay. It's like, I know.
Yeah. So I have one called Kanban is Lean, and that's the that's the chorus. So, so it goes, Kanban is lean, the best pull machine at this moment. Cycle time is starting.
I'm looking forward to it. I sometimes force my younger mentees to listen to those songs.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So I'm glad that people in your network are finding some value and humor in it. I hope they're laughing about it.
Yes.
Anything else, Juliana, before we wrap this thing up?
Yeah, I think, is there anything else you want to plug? I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about Les here at the end of this podcast, but what about you?
Yes, thank you. So awarex.io is a startup that I've joined earlier this year. I actually mentored and coached the group through their roadmap and some of their other practices via a incubator I was part of. So shout out to my founder, Amanda Geddes. She is our fierce CEO that's leading the way. Awarex.io, what we do is we create awareness and direction for any company that wants to strengthen their business practices in regard to ESG, and also access capital available for sustainable forward-thinking businesses. So if you're familiar with sustainability-linked loans, sustainable-linked bonds, that is what we're looking to help companies access and build a baseline for their ESG metrics, as well as automate that due diligence process. So we're very excited. We have an MVP in the works. We've been doing validation and getting feedback. We are not only looking for funding and capital, but we are looking for beta testers. So if you are an investment firm or someone as part of a private equity business or part of a bank focused on those types of loans, we are more than happy to bring you on as a beta tester and have a conversation.
Awesome. Cool. So you'll share that info. We can put that in the yes. show notes.
Yes, absolutely.
Love it.
Yeah. All right. Advice. Well,
wrap this thing.
Yep.
Wrap it up.
If you found value in today's episode, share this with a friend. Until next time, get agile and stay agile.